Ben strikes 10 in the morning. Peter Ustinov, Gene Stapleton in Agatha Christie's Dead Man's Folly. The Royal Guard heads along the mall. Red buses drive along crowded streets. In Harrod's Food Hall, the silver-haired Hercule Poirot eyes the fish counter.
Don't you have any more optimistic fish? They all look so depressed.
Hercule Poirot!
Oh, don't tell me it's Olivia. Ariadne Olivier.
Yes!
What are you doing here beneath the ocean? You've become a mermaid.
No. I'm upstairs autographing my new book. Hatchet's Blood and a Parakeet.
Parakeet?
Have you read it?
No.
Well, then I'll give you a copy, autographed. Come over here.
By a glass display case.
You know, I was going to call you.
Oh?
You see, I'm doing a murder hunt.
A murder hunt?
Yes, it's like a treasure hunt, only the players look for clues to a murder that I have devised.
But surely you, of all people, don't need my help in your fictitious creation.
Oh, no. I should say not. I've had plenty of that. That's part of the problem. More and more, I feel that something is wrong. Oh, I can't explain it. It's just an intuition.
Couldn't you just give me the tiniest hint of what it's all about? A very small clue.
No, not here. I can't do that.
Not here in the food hall? Is there danger involved?
Mr. Poirot, your work is solving murders. Mine is to create them in fiction. I have the feeling that mine won't be the only one at Nass House this weekend.
Give me the instructions how to get there.
Thank you. I'll write them down for you.
No need. My mind is very clear.
Well, you can get there by car, but it's shorter and more scenic if you take the ferry on the river.
Mustachio Poirot boards a little passenger boat that leave the inlet by the Thames. He queasily lifts his hat towards fellow passengers. The boat, which is called Sunrider, sails through a lock. There are two women opposite Poirot, a blonde and brunette. Tall 40-something Hastings sits alongside Poirot. Sunrider hoves into a wider stretch of river, banked by lush green trees. Poirot has Ariadne's red book open. He discusses it with Hastings as the boat's captain powers them along the river. Sunrider sails past some well-to-do mansions and houses on the riverbank.
Look at those magnificent old houses. Could you just imagine yourself living somewhere like this?
Oh, they're not houses as such anymore, sir. No, death tax has taken away from the old families, one by one.
We stay at Hordown.
Oh, that's the estate next to Nass House. It's a youth hostel now.
From Germany I am coming. I'm in England for 2 week holiday.
Where do you come from, young lady?
She does not much English speak. From Italy she is becoming.
La bella Italia.
Si, Italia.
But we both have a little French. You are the French, no?
I am the Belgian, yes.
Ah, too bad.
Poirot watches the Italian brunette playing with her hair. He mutters to himself as the boat pulls up to an elegant stone launch, where Ariadne waves and claps. A scruffy bearded old ferryman ties the line as the passengers disembark the boat.
Mr. Poirot.
Mrs. Oliver. You know, my friend,
yes,
how do you do?
You brought weekend guests?
Would that they were. I mean...
The man here does not like we make shortcut to hostel, but it is long walking on the road. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Arrivederci.
Ciao.
Mr. Poirot, now that you're here, I am embarrassed. You see, this was supposed to be my murder hunt, but then I started getting suggestions for changes. Oh, little things mostly, like moving the scene of the crime or having somebody else play the dead body. Well, you must know how we writers hate suggestions.
Writers? Well, detectives are worse. I hate suggestions. Who made these suggestions?
Oh, Lady Stubbs, but I feel she's been influenced by one of the others.
Who?
I'm hoping you can tell me.
Well, first I must know who everyone is.
Well, the River Cottage is Amy Folliott's. This estate was hers till she lost it to death taxes when her husband died. The present owner, Sir George, is letting her stay here for life. Then Michael Wayman, architect and critic. You should hear him go on about that folly. Sir George put the folly up in a rush the very week he arrived at Nass House.
Sir George insisted it be perched up on a pile of loose earth. It doesn't even have a view.
Oh, did I mention there's a fair this weekend? It was an annual event with the Folliots, but Sir George hated the idea. Then he changed his mind about 3 months ago. Then we have Alec and Sally Lake. I wanted Sally for my dead body, but Lady Stubbs insisted she'd be the fortune teller instead. Alec's getting over a nervous breakdown, and if you ask me, the marriage won't last. Nass House returned to its former glory by Sir George Stubbs. Very interesting man, Sir George. Absolutely devoted to Lady Stubbs. A self-made millionaire. Don't ask me how, but rolling in money. A large chunk of which he spent restoring the place.
I should say.
Inside.
Oh.
A spiraling staircase stretches up through Nass House. A chandelier hangs from the ceiling, which bears a painting. Hastings, Poirot and Ariadne stare up appreciatively.
Sir George is very athletic. Younger than you'd expect. His wife is even younger, Hattie. She's American. Probably married him for his money. She's very beautiful, but a little dim, if you know what I mean.
Sir George is in the outdoor pool.
Ah!
He climbs out and takes a towel from his PA, Amanda.
Monsieur Poirot. And Hastings, isn't it?
That's right, yes. How do you do?
Pleasure to meet you.
Sir George, it is important.
Where's Hattie? Would you go and get her, Amanda, and the others? It's time for tea. Excuse me, please. Hello?
Well, what do you think? Don't you sense something abnormal in the atmosphere?
Abnormal? No. But then, of course, I haven't had the privilege of meeting with...
Beautiful blonde Hattie strides outside and puts a ring on her finger.
Lady Stubbs.
Hattie admires the ring as she saunters across the yard in a flowing white dress.
Lady Stubbs, may I present Hercule Poirot and Arthur Hastings.
Delighted to meet you.
Oh, hi. It's brand new. George gave it to me. They're emeralds.
If I may say so, they're nothing compared with their wearer.
See? It's winking at me.
You're trespassing! Go back!
Damned youth hostel next door. I'd like to see it shut down. They use it as a shortcut, go traipsing across to the ferry boat. No respect for private property. All communists, I shouldn't wonder.
Thank you.
They're on a porch.
Shall I fetch you some tea, madam?
Tea tastes like medicine.
The countryside looks wonderful at this time of year, don't you agree?
During the day, when it's not raining. But there aren't any nightclubs.
Oh, you like nightclubs?
Oh, yes. Because there's music and you can dance. Right, Michael? And I can wear my nicest clothes and bracelets and rings. And all the other women have nice jewelry and clothes as well. But not as nice as mine.
And that's important.
Oh, sure. Or else you're plain and nobody. Like poor Amanda.
She glances over at mousy-haired Amanda, who haughtily makes some notes. Hattie stands up.
I'm going upstairs now.
You've been in bed all day. You're not feeling well.
I have a headache.
Amy gets up.
I'll attend to her.
I'll be better tomorrow.
Poirot follows the two women indoors, then loiters and watches in an ornately framed mirror as Amy shows Hattie through a big wooden door and shuts it. Back outside on the porch.
She's very beautiful.
Yes, she is extremely...
but only in a decorative sort of way, not functional. A building needs a good foundation, not just an ornamental facade.
Okay, everybody, pay attention. I'm going to explain my murder hunt. This is a map of the grounds and our cast of characters. The first is our nuclear scientist.
Oh.
Possibly in the employ of spies. His first wife is dead, or may not be. His second wife has just left him and is hiding next door in the youth hostel. She's Yugoslavia. Now, you'll find your first clue in the picture at the bottom of the page.
I think it's obviously a net of some sort. Tennis net or hair net?
Very good.
Tennis net?
Yes, leave it to the professionals. Now remember, all clues lead to the boathouse where the Yugoslavian wife has been strangled with a clothesline. Any questions so far?
I think I must go and see if Hattie needs anything.
And I'm sure that Monsieur Poirot and Captain Hastings would like to be shown their rooms so they can freshen up before dinner.
How well you understand.
Yes, thank you very much indeed.
Take this.
Oh, right, old boy.
Ariadne looks around indignantly from her seat on the porch, which overlooks the fairground rides being set up on the lawn. Amanda shows Poirot into a bedroom.
Ah, good.
And Captain Hastings is next door.
Lily!
Hello!
Hello!
I hope everything will be satisfactory.
To whom do we owe these considerations? Is it you, Miss Bruce, or is it our charming hostess?
Lady Stubbs's time is fully taken up in being charming.
Well, she's a very decorative person.
As you say.
Perhaps her intellectual attainments are not of the same... I should not have said that.
Lady Stubbs, besides being, as you say, decorative, is also extremely shrewd. Oh, yours, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
She goes. Hastings spots Hattie on the lawn.
Poirot? Come look at this.
Poirot joins Hastings at the window.
Why is she taking her shoes off?
They continue to watch from the high window as Hattie nips behind a small fairground tent. Michael wanders across the grass and looks around nonchalantly.
It's Wayman.
I know who it is. It's Wayman. Don't lose them from sight.
Poirot heads out of the room as Michael heads behind the same tent as Hattie. Poirot exits the main house and hurries down the steps, crossing the gravel driveway and stepping onto the well-kept lawn. He scurries across the grass towards the tent, which has yellow and white stripes. He shrugs up at Hastings, who mimics him.
Sorry. Where? Where? The early evening air is so very good for the lungs. It's 46, 47.
Are you all right, Monsieur Poirot?
Let me walk you to your home.
Thank you. It was I who introduced Hattie to Sir George.
Oh.
Yes. I deliberately influenced her.
Well, that was a very far-sighted move on your part.
Why do you say that?
Well, after all, you got a haven of your own out of it.
They arrive at Amy's house. She shuts the garden gate on Poirot.
Do you know those lines of Spenser? Sleep after toil, port after stormy seas, ease after war, death after life doth greatly please. It's a very wicked world, Monsieur Poirot, and there are very wicked people in it. Well, you
probably know that as well as I do. I don't say so before the younger people. It might discourage them. But the world is very wicked.
Amy, whose fading blonde hair is tied back in a bun, heads off inside.
Ferry, sir.
Ah! You mustn't do that. That's extremely dangerous.
Ferry, sir.
Ferry, no, thank you. I'm going for a walk from Nurse House.
Ah, she's back like she was in the old days. Last Squire Folliot led her on to seed. Only interested in the horses. And the bottle, he was. Lost a pretty packet at both, he did. Me? I concentrate me vices.
He offers some booze.
No. Look here, please. No, I don't.
Frenchy, are you?
I'm Belgian.
Ah, oh, sure you won't have a dram, then?
Very much, you're very kind.
Rare and cunning, the Folliots are.
Poirot turns to face the grey-bearded ferryman.
Why do you say that?
There'll always be a Folliot at Nass House.
Well, that's not true. You've now got Sir George Stubbs.
Come in the night, he did. Him and his ladyship. Worst gale as ever I remember. Trees down right and left. Even the big oak where he put the folly. Gone. All gone.
The ferryman stares blankly into the distance.
Tell me more about the Folliots.
The ferryman looks round slowly.
Always a Folliot at Nass, lass. Always a Folliot at Nass, lass. Always a Folliot. Folly, folly, folly. Oh, always a Folliot at Nass, Nass, Nass. Always a Folliot at Nass. Always a Folliot at Nass. Lass. Always a Folliot at Nass. Lass. Always a Folliot.
Poirot walks away as the ferryman crumbles to the floor at the end of the stone launch. A hand reaches up from the river and drags the comatose ferryman under the surface. Poirot comes out onto the porch at the main house, where breakfast is served.
Good morning.
Morning.
You're up bright and early. I expect you've come to see Marilyn Gale.
Who?
Morning. Morning. Marilyn Gale, the film star who's coming to open the fair, personally.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Mr.
George.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning, Alec.
The legs.
Hattie comes out.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, darling.
Good morning.
Sir George, I can't seem to find today's mail. Lady Stubbs, you know the mail is my responsibility.
Oh, well, I just wanted to look at my Vogue. Here. Well, let me see if I have anything else.
Hattie goes through the post, handing letters to Amanda.
Ah.
She keeps back a blue envelope. Amanda testily sits down next to Hattie, who opens the envelope. Poirot watches with a screwed-up squint as Hattie reads the letter.
Oh!
What is it, darling?
Eddie South is coming. Today!
Who?
Eddie South. A boy from my hometown.
He was what?
Nothing. It was a long time ago. I have a headache. I'm going to lie down.
No, Lady Stubbs has left her reading mat. I'm already up.
Oh, my lady. You have forgotten this.
Oh, thanks.
Excuse me, but your news from an old friend seems to distress you somewhat.
Eddie's no friend. I don't want to see him. I don't like him. He It's bad. He does very bad things.
Patty! My poor darling. Let me come and tuck you up.
He does very bad things, George.
Headache, my foot.
Mr. Poirot! You forgot your book?
My book.
Now, do you see what I mean? Things just aren't normal around here.
Oh, they seem normal enough to me.
Well, you must be kidding. Doesn't your intuition tell you that there's something strange going on?
My intuition tells me that I've not yet finished my quest.
Outside, a couple set up a plant stall at the fair. A delighted-looking Ariadne leads Hastings and Poirot from the main house.
Well, this is my big day.
Hello! Well, I'm sorry, this is not a shortcut. This is private property. You're trespassing.
Please?
You're trespassing. You can't come through here. This is private.
But we come for carnival.
Bloody hell. It's not open yet, and you need a ticket from the gate.
Gate?
Yes, gate. You know, bars, locked. Road? Comprendo Road? What's that, Hattie? Oh, all right, never mind. Be my guests. All right, Hattie, darling, I'm coming.
The German and Italian girls head off.
Marlene, there you are, darling. That's my new dead body. Nobody's going to believe that she's the Yugoslavian second wife of a nuclear scientist.
No.
You look adorable, darling. This is Marlene, our murder victim, Mr. Poirot and Captain Hastings.
I did it.
But I'm not going to have any blood on me.
Oh, dear. What a frightful shame.
A murder ought to have blood. Mm. And there should be a sex maniac. Was even one around here once. My granddad saw a dead woman down by the woods. At least that's what he says. But granddad's daft.
Oh, yes. Well, let's go down to the boathouse and get you settled in for the murder. Excuse us.
It's welcome to Nass House Fair. The gates swing open and a big crowd heads in. Bleach blonde Marilyn Gale is on stage with Hattie and Sir George.
For me to welcome you and to welcome the return of this marvelous fair in the lovely grounds of Sir George and Lady Stubbs' darling house. And now, if we're ready...
Amanda hands Marilyn a starter's pistol.
I hereby declare this fair open.
She shuts her eyes and fires into the air. Colourful balloons rise into the sky. Kids enjoy a merry-go-round. A waltzer powers up. Kids eat candy floss. Marilyn whacks a strength test with a hammer.
Dorothy, it's been ages.
We had to come to see Nass back in its glory.
I came to see that Marilyn Gale. That hair in the big hat?
No, that's Lady Stubbs, I tell you. Is she always quite so overdone?
She's a perfectly charming young woman. You'll meet her later. I'm sure you'll like her.
Poirot enters fortune teller Madame Zuleika's tent.
You don't happen to have the time, do you? I'm dying for my tea and I'm due a half-hour break at 4.
It's 4:10. Just... long enough to tell my fortune.
Very well. Give me your palm.
This one?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
She tickles his palm.
Don't do that.
Madame Zuleika is actually the pretty blonde Sally Legg.
You will come into a great deal of money.
Oh.
Take a sea voyage and get everything you want for Christmas.
Oh, incidentally, it is... 4:09. Bye.
Poirot passes a hoopla stall.
Hoopla, hoopla. Real sturdy thing.
A customer steps back into him.
You have broken my rhythm.
It is unforgivable to break someone's rhythm. Do forgive, please.
The customer throws and misses.
Ah, bad luck. Could I have 3, please? Hold this. And pay him.
As the disgruntled young customer looks on, Poirot easily throws 3 hoops over a prize.
Oh, yeah.
I did not yet have time to acquire my rhythm, you understand, sir. Please, I want this one.
Hey, also, a dolly.
Thank you very much. It is yours.
I did not win. I do not deserve.
Извините, пожалуйста.
He hands the dolly to Hastings. A rugged-looking young man pilots a small wooden dinghy away from a much larger yacht which is moored in the river. The young man, Eddie, has tousled brown hair.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ariadne Oliver's murder hunt is about to begin. Maps giving the first clue to the murder hunt are available at the South Portico. Ariadne Oliver's murder hunt about to begin.
Poirot spots Sir George giggling with the Italian brunette in a quiet corner by the house. Eddie scans around amongst the crowd.
Big queen for the big people.
Excuse me. I thought that this was the home of a guy named Stubbs.
Oh, it is.
My name's Eddie South.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote to Mrs. Stubbs that I'd be arriving, but I don't know that she...
Yes, they talked about you at breakfast.
Then she did get my letter.
Yes.
It's funny, she never wrote me back.
Mademoiselle, could you tell us where Lady Stubbs is for this gentleman?
No, I've been looking all over the place for her. She's late for judging the children's fancy dress.
Well, then I suggest we do the next best thing and find Sir George for you. Come along, sir. Sir George?
He's chatting up young ladies.
Sir George, may I present Eddie South, the friend of Lady Stubbs?
How'd you do?
It's quite a place you have here.
I'd be happy to show you around.
Well, that sounds great, but I'd really like to see Hattie.
Oh, she's probably around somewhere. Probably off on the murder hunt with that ghastly woman. Do be a good chap, Poirot, and see if you can scare her.
The first clue, if I remember rightly, is a tennis net.
On a tennis court, Hastings bends to peer at the net.
No, I can't see anything here, Poirot.
I have something here. Hmm? Tennis net over this water. Is there a waterfall near here?
Yes, hang on a minute, ma'am. Yes! Yeah, it says Cascade.
The two chaps find Ariadne perched on a stone wall, overlooking a little waterfall.
Mrs. Oliver! You're enjoying your cascade.
Well, I was hoping you were somebody who was playing my game. Well, I'm afraid I made the clues too hard.
Not at all. No, Mrs. Oliver.
That's Orpheus, Greek god of music.
What is the name of that building?
The music temple.
Big god. See, it's got columns, classical. The next clue must be...
Right! Oh, you're amazing. I don't know how you do it.
Little grey cells.
Now, you must row out there and see if you can find the next clue.
Over the water?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
In any case, we must find Lady Stubbs.
Oh, well, you can do that later. Go on, get in your boat, and I'll wait for you down at the boathouse.
But don't tell us where you're going to wait for us, madam. Spoils all the fun. Help the others if you wish, but not us.
Right.
Get in first. Tell me if it's dangerous.
Ooh,
oh, you're going away. Yeah. You're going away. Come back. Listen.
Hang on to the oar. Hang on to the oar, ma'am.
There you are.
There. Give me your hand. Both of them.
Wait. Oh.
Now,
okay.
Give me a push.
All right.
There you are. There you are. Now remember, I'll see you at the boathouse.
Hastings rows Poirot over to the music temple in a small orange rowboat. They reach a wooden jetty.
Don't panic.
Hello. Hang on, Poirot. Would you hang on there?
There.
Sure, Poirot.
The door is there.
I'm sorry, no. Man.
Follow me.
Hi there.
That's a treble clef, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, key of F.
Key of F.
Yes.
Key of F. Mm. And where the holly?
Yes, holly.
Holly. Key of F.
F.
Holly.
Yeah.
Folly.
Hold on a man.
The key to the boathouse is in
the folly. The folly, that's it.
Mr. Poirot! Captain Hastings! Come quickly to the boathouse! Oh, please, quickly come to the boathouse! Please, come quickly!
They leave the music temple and join Ariadne on the other side of the river. They all hurry along the grassy bank towards the boathouse. Ariadne leads the way through the open door. They head past rows of stowed boats and find Marlene lying dead on the floor with a rope around her neck. Poirot feels for a pulse.
It's just like my murder.
Yes, it is, Mrs. Oliver. Exactly like your murder. Except that this young lady is dead.
Poirot lets Marlene's arm drop to the floor. Two cop cars and an ambulance head down the drive towards the main house. They pull up on the grass between some trees. A squad of uniformed cops and a few plainclothes men hurry over to the boathouse. A sergeant stabs the grass with a cordon pole. As the cops set up a tape cordon outside, the police pathologist examines Marlene's body. A photographer snaps away as he works. The raffish-looking Inspector Bland comes in and hunkers over Marlene's body. He stands up straight and crosses his arms for a moment. He leaves the boathouse.
It was my murder, and I did it. I did it! It was my murder! I did it! It was my murder!
Mrs. Oliver, be a man! You must not blame yourself.
Oh, but I do! Didn't I tell you my murder might not be the only one that was committed here this weekend?
The inspector.
It was my murder! I did it!
Who are you?
My name is Hercule Poirot. And this...
Of course you are. I was present when you solved the ABC murders. Extraordinary performances. Well, I've filled out a bit since then.
Oh, who has not filled out?
Actually, I have.
No, you have not filled out.
You probably don't remember me.
Oh, I do. ABC murders? You were a detective sergeant at the time. Now you must be... you must be a detective inspector or something. Your name began with an H. Bland, that's who you are.
But that was 15 years ago.
You remember me? Why should I not remember you? And this is...
Hastings,
over. Hastings. It is Hastings.
How do you...
And that is Mrs. Oliver.
Oliver? Ariadne Oliver, the American detective writer.
Why, yes.
I've just read your latest book, Hatchet, Blood and a Parakeet. Quite absorbing.
Oh, thank you. Oh, but this isn't fiction. Why did I ever allow that poor child to play the Yugoslavian second wife of a nuclear scientist?
The dead girl was the wife of a Yugoslavian scientist?
No. She was the Yugoslavian wife of a nuclear scientist.
Perhaps I may be allowed to elucidate. Mrs. Oliver here invented a murder hunt, a game, in which clues were left here and there. We had to find them, and whoever won would win the prize. But unfortunately, life itself has begun mysteriously to intrude upon this game.
Could you be more specific?
Well, it could have been somebody who likes killing little girls. Or she might have recognized somebody who was trying to conceal his identity. Blackmail is always a possibility. Or what if she saw somebody on that yacht out there throw a body into the river?
Thank you, Mrs. Oliver. Does Sir George know what's happened?
Certainly not. Sir George always does his laps at this time of day.
His what?
Laps. Swimming. Sir George always does 50 laps before tea.
I should like to talk to him straight away.
Inspector, can Hastings and I accompany you unofficially, of course?
By all means. I'd be honored.
May I come too, please? There may be a book in it.
Hastings and Poirot exchange a dubious glance as Ariadne scuttles between them. Sir George dries off by the pool as Bland leads a posse of people towards him.
Sir George, I regret to inform you that a murder has been committed on your property. Really, Mrs. Oliver, isn't this carrying things too far? Low comedy police. I mean, the chap looks like something out of the burlesque.
Detective Inspector Bland, sir.
Oh. Sorry.
It's Marlene, down at the boathouse. She's been murdered.
Yes, I know.
I mean, really murdered.
Where's Hattie? Does she know?
Lady Stubbs cannot be located.
Damn it. This news will frighten her. Amanda, give these gentlemen all the help that they require. What a terrible tragedy. And find Hattie.
Marlene's body is covered up and carried out of the boathouse.
Well, simple and straightforward as it can be, the girl was garrotted with a clothesline. No struggle. I'd say the poor kid didn't know what was happening until it happened.
Signs of sexual assault?
None.
Hey, Inspector, may I make a contribution?
Probably quite insignificant, but there is here a tray with a plate and a glass on it.
Well, I brought that. Lady Stubbs thought it'd be nice to take the poor girl some refreshment. So I did.
At what time?
At about 4 o'clock.
Estimated time of death?
Between 4 and 4:30.
Miss Brewis, on your way down here or on your way back, did you encounter anyone?
No one.
You know what this is, don't you? A copycat killing. Somebody studied my murder and decided to commit one of their own.
Quite possibly, Mrs.
I know where Lady Stubbs is.
Oh?
Hiding.
Hiding where?
I don't know where, but somewhere she's hiding from that... Hattie received a letter from him this morning at breakfast.
Oh, Eddie South.
Yes, Eddie South.
That is his yacht over there, Inspector. She received a letter announcing his arrival today, and it seemed to distress her somewhat.
Officer! Now, Launch, I want a word with Mr. South.
His boat sails across the river towards him. Bland, some officers, Poirot, Hastings, Amanda and Ariadne are on board. As the boat pulls alongside Eddie's yacht, Bland climbs on deck.
May we come aboard? Police business.
Ariadne follows Bland onto the deck, then Amanda comes next. Hastings follows in a light straw hat, and lastly Poirot clambers on board as Eddie watches with an increasing look of incredulity. The guests head below decks.
Mr. South, a girl has been found murdered in the boathouse over there.
What? You're kidding?
Around the time that you arrived. Can you turn that off, please?
Yeah.
I don't suppose you heard or noticed any specific activities in the boathouse as you came ashore?
No, look, I just pulled in, you know. These two guys right here introduced me to Lord George.
Sir George.
Yeah, whatever.
Have you met Lady Stubbs yet?
Hattie? No. I mean, I hung around with Lord, her husband for a while, but he didn't seem to like me too much, so I came on back here to the boat. He said he was going to call me when she turned up. Where is she?
Missing.
Missing?
What do you mean, missing? Like
vanished?
Or maybe like she just zipped into town for a six-pack.
Mr. South, when we say that someone is missing, it means that we don't know. Now, Mr. South.
Eddie's fine.
Mr. South, when did you first meet Hattie?
Frimple.
Frimple?
Hattie Frimple. Well, she was the beautiful rich girl back in my hometown, and I was this poor fat kid, you know? And I worked in a record store where all the kids hung out. She'd come in the store and we'd talk about music and how much I wanted to make it in this business. I remember she used to say to me, just do it, Eddie. I believe in you. So one day I did. I now manage some of the biggest rock acts in this business. You see, she knew that I had the right stuff up here.
Licky Gray Sells. Continue, please.
Well, after that she graduated and came to England and, her parents died, and after that, I lost track. Until about 3 months ago. I came over here to pick up this little life's ambition, and there was her name, boom, right there in the paper. Some kind of a society thing, I guess. So I dropped her a note.
You dropped her a note 3 months ago?
Yeah, give or take.
Was that the only note you dropped her?
Yeah. She never wrote me back, but, I don't know, I decided I was just going to sail on down anyway. I figured she'd get a kick out of seeing how the kid turned out.
Bland wanders up behind a smirking Eddie.
I trust you won't object if my men search your boat.
What for?
The watching Poirot and co. watch Eddie nervously.
Oh, you think I killed that girl?
I don't know.
Maybe you figure that I've got Hattie stowed away here someplace. But aren't you supposed to have some kind of a warrant to go poking around?
Yes.
Go ahead. I got nothing to hide.
Seems to be a fairly straightforward sort of chap. I wonder why Lady Stubbs is afraid of him.
If, in fact, she is afraid of him.
Bland questions Mrs. Tucker in the main house.
Arlene was such a good little girl. I know we had our disagreements, all parents do. I didn't approve of all that makeup she wore, or the boyfriend she ran around with, staying out to all hours, missing school, them tramp girlfriends of hers lying about the house all day, painting their toenails, never turning the music down. What would we do without her?
Mrs. Tucker, how did Marlene come to be involved with this murder hunt?
Well, Tuckers have always worked for the Folliots ever since there was a Nass house.
Did she have any enemies that you know of?
No, she had boyfriends.
Now, look here, Bland, I want a word with you.
I am sorry, Mrs. Tucker. My condolences.
Thank you, Mrs. Tucker. That will be all. Officer, please see the lady out. Yes, Sir George?
I gather that Lady Stubbs has not been found yet. What are you doing about it?
Looking for her.
A question, perhaps. Thank you very much. Sir George, did you receive a letter from Hedy South 3 months ago?
No, only that one this morning.
Why do you think that Lady Stubbs was so terrified of Hedy South?
Well, she wasn't very articulate about it. Just went on in a childish sort of way. I don't set much stock by what Hattie says sometimes.
Might I know her precise words, please?
About Eddie South?
Yes.
She said he kills people.
He kills people?
I shouldn't take what she says too seriously. I'm devoted to Hattie, but...
But to say he kills people?
How many keys were there to the boathouse?
Amanda?
3. I have one, and there's one hidden in the folly for the murder hunt.
Which makes 2.
The 3rd is in the drawer over there.
Bland snaps his fingers and a uniformed cop heads over to a bureau. He opens a little drawer and takes out a key, which he hands over to Bland.
Yes, that's it.
Mrs. Oliver, I believe that the girl Marlene's duty was to lie still and play dead if she heard the noise of someone approaching.
Yes, that's right.
But in light of the fact that all the keys are now identified, is it not possible that she did the opposite? She rose and she opened the door to her murderer simply because she recognized him? Or her? All right. I agree with Mrs. Oliver. The murderer must have known about the murder hunt.
Excuse me. I think I'll go and see if Hattie's returned to her room.
Sir George walks out.
She's not in her room. She's obviously avoiding Eddie South.
That's what I said.
We only have her word for the fact that she was frightened of Eddie South. How do we know she's telling the truth?
Women often say things they don't mean.
How do you know?
I don't wish to discuss it.
Between 4 and 4:30. That was my break from fortune-telling. I had tea.
In the tea tent?
Yes, certainly.
Was Mrs. Folliot there?
No.
Mr. Legg, where were you?
Well, that was about the time I returned to our cottage. I stayed there until I was sent for.
You are ill, of course.
Well, I was sick. Sick and tired.
Shaggy-haired Alec gives Sally a cold stare. Amanda leads cops up a hill.
Michael Wayman does his architect work here.
Hastings.
Well, Poirot, don't you want to hear what Michael Wayman has to say? He seems to me to be a bit...
Yes, but I'd rather hear what Mrs. Folliot has to say before the police have a crack at her.
Michael draws technical building plans.
Where were you between 4 and 4:30?
The handsome fellow spins to look at Bland.
That when she got it?
Go on.
How do you pin it down so exactly?
About 4 o'clock, Lady Stubbs asked Miss Brewis here to take down a tray of refreshments to Marlene Tucker. The dead body was...
I don't believe it for a minute.
What don't you believe?
You claim dear Hattie sent you on an errand for someone else.
She did.
Never. Totally out of character. Hattie is a girl completely obsessed with herself. She wouldn't think of sending cough drops to Camille.
Oh.
Oh, hi.
May we come in?
Yes. I expect you've come to talk about the tragedy. That poor, poor girl.
You said only yesterday that it's a very wicked world.
But I never thought anything like this would happen. May I offer you tea? I'll put the kettle to boil.
Oh, no. We can only stay a moment.
Can you prove where you were all afternoon?
No, I can't prove where I was all afternoon. I knocked about a bit, watched the tourists behave like tourists, chatted up the film star. Now, there's a piece of work.
Did you also happen to chat up Lady Stubbs?
No chance. Parading around like a department store mannequin.
When was the last time you saw Lady Stubbs?
I don't know. 3:30, I guess. Why?
That was about the last time anyone saw her. She seems to have vanished.
Vanished? Oh, wonderful.
Find it amusing that Lady Stubbs is missing?
Oh, Hattie plays the helpless ingenue. But she knows exactly what she's doing. I can vouch for that.
Can you?
Bland eyes him suspiciously.
I think Mrs. Folliot taught her a lot. Even introduced her to Sir George, did you know that? Mrs. Folliot may not be mistress of the manor anymore, but she could teach survival skills to the Marines.
No family portraits, Mrs. Folliot?
When one has lost a family, portraits are only memory. And memory is like dead wood. It must be cut away if one is to go on.
They tell me you lost both your sons.
Yes. Henry, through an illness. Jamie, my younger, died in the army. My husband's tragedy was that he lived too long, letting the family wealth trickle through his fingers.
Did you know that Lady Stubbs is nowhere to be found?
Don't speak to me of Hattie. I don't want to think about her.
And yet only this morning she also was talking about wickedness. She was referring, of course, to the young American on his yacht. There seems to be wickedness everywhere suddenly. What a coincidence.
For Hattie, there are no shadings, only black and white, good and evil.
Like a child. Children are erratic, or so I'm told. I do not have the privilege of knowing many personally. But a child can be docile at one moment and the next moment have a temper tantrum. And if you get an adult with childish characteristics, this tantrum can become a rage so violent that he or she can kill.
Hattie was never like that. I won't allow you to say such things about her. She was a gentle, warm-hearted girl. My Hattie would never kill anyone.
Sorry to disturb. Detective Inspector Bland. Might I have a few words with you?
Yes, do come in. All of you.
Bland steps inside.
Where was I between 4 and 4:30? Oh, that was tea time. I was helping serve in the tea tent.
Did you happen to notice within the... I'm so sorry, it's your...
No, please.
No, I was rude.
No, feel free.
Really?
A victor's ear.
Oh. Did you notice Mrs. Legg in the tent?
No, I don't think I did.
Could you have missed her?
Oh, no. No, I made a point of going round to greet everyone.
In the main house.
Of course, Miss Bruce said that Lady Stubbs told her to take the refreshments down to Marlene.
And Michael Wayman contends that it is unlike them.
Well, I agree with him.
Mrs. Legg said that she was having tea between 4 and 4:30.
And Mrs. Folliot says she wasn't.
Sir George was doing his laps.
Well, no one saw him do that.
And that old man could have seen Eddie South getting off his boat. You haven't interrogated him yet.
I shall do so in the morning.
Now, Alec Legg has no alibi for the time in question.
Nor has Michael Wayman.
This is all so fascinating. And you get to do it every day.
A maid turns down Poirot's bed. She stops at the door to let Poirot past. He throws down Ariadne's book.
Well, old man, any conclusions?
Yes, quite a few conclusions.
Well, who do you think our murderer was, then?
The murderer of Marlene or of Lady Stubbs?
Lady Stubbs? Well, you don't think she's been killed?
Yes, I do think she's been killed.
I can't imagine why.
Because Mrs. Folliot thinks she's been killed.
She never said that.
Whatever Mrs. Folliot thinks or says or pretends to think, she believes that Hattie has been killed. Mrs. Folliot knows more than we do.
You know, this whole thing is incredible. Marlene, then Hattie disappearing. Why would she run away? Damn pleased with her new ring. Got all dolled up for the fair. Believe me, you never know what fool things women can do.
One can never know.
Sorry. Something must be done. Amanda, put a notice in the newspapers for her.
She never reads the newspapers. I could put an advertisement in Vogue. That might catch her eye.
Anything, anything. I'm going to phone Blair.
George marches indoors.
Men are such fools.
Why should you make such an observation, mademoiselle?
Most of the time they're quite shrewd. Then they go off and marry the wrong woman.
Oh, I see. You mean Lady Stubbs is the wrong woman?
Totally. She makes a fool of him. Him and Michael Wayman. Oh, Mr. Wayman would be in sorry shape if he didn't have another kettle to boil.
To what kettle are you referring?
Sally Legg. She was the one who recommended him to Sir George as architect. She and Mr. Wayman knew each other in Chelsea. She was an aspiring artist before she was married, of course, but I don't like to gossip. But as to Sir George, with the proper wife at his side, oh, he could achieve wonderful things in politics, business. His abilities and potential are being smothered by that.
Amanda recovers her composure.
You will excuse me, I have my duties to perform.
Poirot stares up at the folly. He starts up the basic wooden steps towards it. He reaches the top of the rise and loiters outside the folly, stepping around its perimeter. He clutches Ariadne's red book behind his back as he steps into the small folly and stands at its centre. There are benches around the low circular stone wall. He spots a tiny gold plane on one of the benches and picks it up for a closer inspection. He spots the young man from the hoopla stall running up the hill towards him.
We meet again. I am the rhythm breaker, remember?
Oh, yes.
Drastvuyte or something of a kind. You are at the hostel?
Hostel, yes.
In that case, you are trespassing.
Yes, trespassing.
Yes, you will have to go back.
Go back. Yes, I go back.
Do svidania, am I right?
Poirot waves the fellow off, then turns and goes back to the many-pillared folly. He stares through a wooden trellis covered in vines. He spots Sally in the folly, feeling around for something on the floor.
Oh, Mr. Poirot, I didn't hear you.
You have lost something, perhaps?
No, not exactly.
No? In that case, it must be a secret rendezvous.
I really think you ought to mind your own business.
Oh, I can't. You know, I've tried so hard. Is your husband the jealous type?
Not even close. Do you know, I think I could walk through that fair stark naked and he wouldn't even notice.
Oh, that I'd have to see to believe.
Sally smiles and sits down on a bench next to Poirot.
Are you married, Mr. Poirot?
No, I'm the carefree bachelor. Oh,
very wise. Marriage can be a big mistake.
You wish you were still the bohemian artist from Chelsea?
You seem to know all about me.
I keep my ear open.
Something's troubling Alec. He just won't loosen up. At first I tried sympathy and... well, now I'm trying other things. But he won't even talk to me. I thought for a while it was another woman. I am the jealous type.
Poirot grins at her indulgently.
Did you enjoy your tea yesterday?
Tea? Yes. The fortune-telling was terribly trying, though.
Could it be this that you are looking for?
The plane.
Yes. I've been looking for this for days.
For days? I saw it on your wrist when you were telling my fortune yesterday.
Ah. Yes, I only noticed that it was missing this morning. Anyway, thank you very much.
She hurries out of the folly, leaving Poirot alone. He stands up.
And now, the lover.
Alec.
Oh, no. Ah, oh, I was expecting someone else.
Who did you expect?
Oh, but the young man you were expecting, he's gone back to the youth hostel. He's Russian, isn't he? Or Bulgarian, at a pinch.
What do you mean?
Do I mean nothing? The young man's gone back to the youth hostel, that's what I...
You're down here to spy on me, aren't you? Well, I'm not going to tell them what they want, whether you believe me or not. But I can't prove it, so you go right ahead, you turn me in. That's what you paid for, isn't it? I don't give a damn anyway.
Poirot watches haughtily as Alec hurries away, then spots Hastings with some cops at the bottom of the hill.
Mon Dieu, it's rush hour.
Poirot!
Hello!
Poirot! Come here, they've found something in the river!
Wait! Wait for me! Wait for me! Wait for me!
Eddie watches through binoculars from his yacht as the cops arrive on the stone launch. Eddie looks grim-faced as he lowers the binoculars. A plainclothes detective arrives at the launch by motorized dinghy. He carries a large gold-colored hat.
Inspector, we've found a woman's hat. Oh, what's left of it?
Eddie heads across the river in his smaller boat.
This is Hattie's. She was wearing it yesterday.
Oh, yes, I recognize it.
What is going on?
They found my wife's hat in the river.
Inspector, divers downstream just found a body. They're bringing it in.
Sir George looks round sharply at Bland. Poirot observes with a frown. The police boat arrives at the launch. Two frogmen stand aside as Sir George climbs on board and unzips the grey body bag on the deck. It's the body of the old ferryman. Sir George and Bland exchange a glance. At the main house...
Poirot! Poirot! I got something to show you. Ah, look.
A pinboard.
Object of the exercise, Nass House murders, solution all. Now, here we have Amanda Bruce. Did she kill Marlene Tucker? Eddie South, did he drown old Murdell? Sir George Stubbs, did he kill Lady Stubbs? I think we should assume that she's still alive, so I'm going to pin her up here. Any objections?
No, goodbye, Lady Stubbs.
Do you agree with me so far?
So far? Oh, yes.
Now, you'll see that I put the legs, I've grouped them with Michael Wayman.
Yeah.
Now, here's the foreign young man. Uh-huh. Here we have
Oh, Ariadne Oliver. Oh, I don't think she's a suspect.
Oh, no. Ah, don't be careful there. Ooh, that could be...
Poirot, I'm sorry, but you're beginning to get on my nerves. I mean, just because you never write anything down doesn't mean that you're superior or that I'm less efficient. I mean, here I am. I mean, I've got all these facts marshalled, and you just sit there...
My poor Hastings, the last thing I want to do is to hurt your feelings, but you must realize, sooner or later, there is a considerable difference between military intelligence and normal intelligence. Rather than surrender to unpleasantness, let us join forces once more. Tell me where in your scheme of things you place Mrs. Folliot.
Mrs. Folliot. Yes, I've racked my brains, and I can't for the life of me think where to put Mrs. Folliot.
You see, we arrive at the same conclusion. You by rather cumbersome methods, and I by something a little more different ones. Let us bury the hatchet and go together and take Mrs. Folliot by surprise. What do you say to that?
Very good.
By Amy's garden fence.
Ah!
Gentlemen, if you've come to see Sir George...
As a matter of fact, we have come to see you.
Oh. Well, in that case, you must allow me to offer you tea this time.
She brings a tea tray into her living room.
Oh, look how my hand shakes. I'm very tired.
Gunners. Royal Artillery, your husband?
Family regiment. I shall be not only ready, but very thankful when my time comes, Monsieur Poirot.
Surely you exaggerate.
The deaths here have upset me greatly.
I'm sorry to hear that. But it's strange that you, who have lost a husband, two sons, your home, suddenly go to pieces because a couple of relative strangers are killed.
I'm older now.
Mrs. Folliot, you know who killed Marlene Tucker, and you know why. You know if old Mardell was murdered and by whom, and you know what happened to Hattie Stubbs.
You are mistaken, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh? But you must have a guess in you like everybody else. May we have the benefit of those guesses. Mrs. Folliot, who did these awful things?
I have nothing more to say. I've given up. Nothing can be done. It's all over.
Well, I have not given up, Mrs. Folliot. And I will not give up. Hercule Poirot never gives up.
Amy looks dubious and takes a sip of tea. Poirot and Hastings are at the Tuckers' farmhouse door. A little girl answers.
Hello.
It's two men, ma'am.
We don't want any.
Oh, good. We don't want to disturb you. My name is Poirot. We met before at Nash House on the day of your tragedy. May we come in?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
They go inside.
Mrs. Tucker, could your daughter have known her assailant?
Marlene didn't know any homicidal maniacs.
Oh, of course not, but it's difficult to identify homicidal maniacs before they strike. I mean, was there someone who was nice to her, who gave her presents?
Oh, that's Mrs. Legg. But she wasn't a homicidal maniac.
Mrs. Legg gave her presents?
Yes. All that terrible makeup. Lipstick, eyeshadow, all that. Of course, I didn't approve, but then I didn't know she was a homicidal maniac. Mrs. Legg didn't murder my daughter, did she? Yes, well, things don't come singly, they say. First Marlene and then my father right after. Drowned down the ferry landing. It's a wonder it didn't come sooner. He was known to take a few drinks too many sometimes.
Are you telling me that Mr. Merdell was your father? That he was Marlene's grandfather?
Yes.
Can you remember a little tune he used to sing? Something like, oh, there'll always be a Folliot at Nass.
Always a Folliot. Folly, 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 oh, always a Folliot at Nass, lass.
Thank you both so very much. And, we are so sorry for what happened, and don't bother to see us out. Thank you.
Poirot and Hastings leave. They're about to get into a taxi.
Quick!
Wait.
They head over towards the little girl that answered the door, Marlene's younger sister.
Nobody give Marlene the makeup. She bought it. Lots more, too, that Mum never found.
Where did she find the money to buy such things?
Well, see, Grandpa Mardell told her something, and somebody was paying her not to pass it on. She'd never tell me what or who. See, Marlene didn't really like me.
She may have saved your life. Remember that.
He taps Hastings, who's been taking notes. The pair of them step away.
We will go back to London.
Ah.
Where you will use your influence on your old friends at the Secret Service to make available to us certain information from the military archives. If what I suspect is true, it will be time to summon who?
The principals.
The gates to Nass House swing open. A cop car drives through. Poirot's taxi pulls up on the driveway outside the main house. The cops are already there. Ariadne hurries out to greet Poirot and Hastings.
Good morning, Captain Hastings. Good morning, Mr. Poirot.
Good morning, Miss Oliver.
Everybody is here, including Inspector Bland. He's waiting inside. Who did it? Do you know the murderer?
No, I was relying on your intuition.
Oh, no. I only had impressions. Oh. Nothing you can put your finger on. I don't like Michael Wayman.
Oh, neither do I.
And Sally and Alec Legg are drifting further and further apart.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Miss Brewis hardly ever leaves Sir George's side
now. Now, that doesn't surprise me a bit.
Mrs. Folliot just wanders around with her pruning shears, clipping everything in sight.
Hastings.
Shall I come with you?
You know perfectly well what you have to do, Hastings. Capito.
Oh, yes, right-ho, yes.
Well, what did you come up with? I'm dying to know.
So am I.
Everyone's in the drawing room. From an ornate chair, Eddie scans the high ceiling. Sir George sits next to him. A uniformed cop shows Poirot and Bland into the room.
Good morning. Captain Hastings will join us presently. First of all, I want to thank Inspector Bland for his courtesy. And I would like to ask you all a few questions. Mrs. Oliver, I would like to direct my first question at you. Oh, don't be alarmed. Nobody here should be alarmed by the questions, only by the answers. Mrs. Oliver, have you ever met a nuclear scientist?
Oh, no. I don't think so.
And yet you made a nuclear scientist one of your suspects in your murder hunt.
Well, last Christmas I bought presents for my two nephews, and everything is nuclear. I guess that's where I got the idea. And then I found that if I needed any technical advice, I could always ask Mr. Legg. You're some sort of scientist, aren't you, Mr. Legg?
Mr. Legg.
Yes, I'm a nuclear physicist.
Oh, then I do know a nuclear scientist. That's amazing.
And yet his wife is not Yugoslav.
Well, I needed that foreign menace, you know. And I used to see those youth hostel girls crossing the property, talking with foreign accents, so I came up with a Yugoslavian wife.
Yes, whereas Mrs. Legg is the opposite. She is British and deeply unhappy.
I don't know what you mean.
Why don't you drop the act, Sally? She's leaving me. Not that I give a damn. You're going to shock me before I have a chance to clear myself. It doesn't really matter, does it?
Alec, what are you talking about?
Perhaps I may cast some light on this. It's Mr. Legg, when he was younger, perhaps in his university years, became deeply impressed by certain aspects of Marxist philosophy. And then he became a reputable scientist, and foreign agents began to work on him, hoping to force him to give away secrets and threatening to reveal his former political affiliations. And naturally, who can blame him? He suffered a severe depression.
Yes, I didn't want to throw away everything I'd worked for.
But at the same time, I couldn't just hand over classified information. One of their people followed me here. He was at the fair. Well, that was when I finally bucked up the courage to tell him that there could be no deal.
Alec, why didn't you tell me?
Because I didn't want to involve you, Sally.
But I thought you were rejecting me.
I thought you'd given up on us.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. I was just using Michael to make you jealous.
Using?
Michael looks indignant. Alec sits down.
Oh, Alec, I do love you.
So I love you too, Sally.
They kiss.
This is all very touching. But what has it got to do with the murders?
Doesn't it warm at least one cockle of your heart? I don't know, during the ABC murders, you were much more... Yes, you were. My question was absolutely everything to do with the murder. It started with my question to Mrs. Oliver. She embodies all that is good and that is, pardon me, bad with instinct. Good is it something quite uncanny at times, something I can't explain and nor can anyone. Sometimes it's excessive and stupid. It was good with Mr. Legg because she knew instinctively that he was a nuclear scientist. It was less good with the Yugoslav wife, which is stupid, forgive me. And you irritated me so very much, very much. I'm sorry. Yes, yes, but it only until the moment that I realized you had gifts which are denied to me, chauvinist cochon that I am.
Oh, no,
oh yes, oh, yes, yes. You see, it was when her vibrations began to tell us all that something abnormal had occurred here that I eventually sent Hastings back to his friends in the Secret Service and to use his connections there to find some military archives which interested me particularly, those of Lieutenant James Folliot. I'm sorry, madame, to cause you such pain, but the truth of the matter is that not both of your sons are dead. One of them, Jamie, your favorite, is still alive. He joined the army and was released from it under circumstances which are at least shrouded in mystery. Her Majesty having no further need for his services. Those are the archives, in case it interests anyone.
Bland grabs the army archive file, which Poirot produced from his pocket. There's a photo inside.
Sir George.
What's this all about? Are you James Folly?
I see no point in denying it, under the circumstances.
Well then, Mr. Folliot, what have you been up to for 20 years?
Mother, do be quiet.
Young James found himself to be incompatible with army life. It was your fault, my dear. You spoiled him.
James was such a sweet little boy. I could deny him nothing.
What happened between his leaving the army and marrying Hattie Frimple is anybody's guess. And who better than... the greatest guesser of us all.
He's on the run, one disguise after another to keep ahead of the cops. His father dies, his mother is destitute, Nass House is lost to death duties, and James Folliot can't do one thing about it.
Until his mother introduces him to Hattie Frimple and hides from anybody the knowledge that he is not dead at all, but has merely changed his identity, and as far as possible, his appearance.
Right, so Sir George Stubbs charms the naive, beautiful, young, rich American girl. He buys back Nass House with her money and brings her back here to live happily ever after.
Oh, thank you, Mrs.
But
Oliver.
But then a letter arrives from a boy that Hattie used to know. She's terrified of him. She tries to hide from him, but Eddie South finds her, drags her onto his boat, murders her, and dumps her body in the river.
Wait a minute! I never murdered anybody!
My wife is not dead.
That is also the truth.
Well, where is she then?
Poirot smiles and opens up the French windows that overlook the neatly kept lawns. He beckons someone over. Hastings manhandles the Italian brunette in shades up the gravel driveway. Sir George stands up, shocked.
As I saw physical intimidation, she wouldn't come of her own volition.
May I present Lady Stubbs?
Poirot removes the woman's brunette wig and shades. It's Hattie.
That's not Hattie.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it is.
Well, is it or isn't it?
No, it isn't. And yet it's difficult to explain. You see, James Folliot, alias Sir George Stubbs, did marry a Hattie Frimple. In America, she was an heiress, and her inheritance restored the Folliot fortune and this house to its former glory. The poor girl didn't enjoy very much of her newfound happiness because this man, repaying her as only he could, killed her.
A furious Eddie leaps on Sir George. Sir George throttles Eddie. Bland drags Sir George off Eddie and holds him in an arm lock.
What proof have you got, Poirot?
The proof. The proof I believe to lie under the folly. That night was a famous one locally. A terrible storm. Trees were uprooted. And into the hole produced by one of these fallen trees, this man buried Hattie Frimple. But trying to regain his cottage in the storm, came old Merdel. He saw what was happening. He was horrified. He ran away. And what was left of his poor mind was permanently affected. In a short time, the folly was built over the body of the dead woman. And this lady took the place of Hattie Frimple. She became just Hattie Stubbs.
I shall need a warrant for some excavations on this property.
Monsieur Poirot, there is only one real criminal in this room, and her name is Bernice Radford. She killed Marlene in the boathouse.
You'd do anything to save your hide, wouldn't you?
She also drowned Merdell in the river.
Oh, you're not going to lay all this on me. He killed the old man. Should have known you'd fold. Your old lady's got all the guts in your family.
I didn't know Jamie was married to her when I introduced Hattie to him. I hoped we could come here, back home, and I could take care of them. Look after Hattie and my son.
Instead, you allowed a murder to go unreported.
I wanted to say, but I couldn't. I couldn't. Jamie is my son.
All right. I still don't understand how Marlene Tucker and the old man were murdered, or why.
Oh, that's easy. These are, I think, exhibits. You see, the old man, through his alcoholic stupor, recognized James Folliot behind the facade of Sir George Stubbs. He tried to communicate his discovery, he sang his stupid little song, and no one listened, of course, to his nonsense, except young Marlene. She could always be bought off with a little pocket money, but for how long? Suddenly something happened. 3 months ago, they got news from Eddie South, who was coming to visit them. He was the only one that had actually known the original Hattie Frimple. Sir George had always been opposed to public fetes and festivals on his land. Now here was an opportunity to have one, including a murder hunt. And if it was clever arranged and stage managed, he could get rid of the two embarrassing witnesses of his previous crime.
I hate it here. Decrepit old house is like a jail.
Well, we'll soon know from you if it's true, madame.
Tell me, how did you know it was me? I thought it was a pretty good disguise.
It was an excellent disguise, but there's always something wrong with every disguise. In this case, the hands. Notice, if you will, how much paler they are than the face. That was an initial mistake. And then I remembered a beautiful young woman near the swimming pool trying to catch the light of the sun in an emerald. It was your lovely white hand which gave you away, madame.
She has fake tan on her face.
Poirot, this is all very impressive as always, but could you be more specific?
Their scenario continued on Saturday morning at breakfast. When the lady, we will still call Lady Stubbs for the sake of convenience, came downstairs with the mail. Now, this was usually Miss Bruce's function, and she was extremely irritated by the initiative taken by Lady Stubbs, who surrendered the mail to her, but kept back one envelope, a blue one, which had been posted actually 3 months before, and announced the imminent arrival on that very day of Mr. Eddie South. She developed an extraordinarily rapid headache and went upstairs to her room. She was not there for very long because she changed into the costume of an Italian girl who was at the youth hostel and appeared in the garden together with a German girl she had found on the way, and then Sir George shouted at her to get off the land, then seemed to be summoned from inside the house by another voice nobody could hear, but it was evidently, judging from his reaction, his wife pleading for calm and generosity, and he allowed the girls to go through. Lady Stubbs reappeared in the garden, ready to open the fete as Lady Stubbs. Just before tea time, she instructed Miss Bruce to deliver some refreshments to the little girl Marlene in the boathouse. It was to prove to Miss Bruce that Marlene was still alive at a time very shortly before her murder. Her ladyship hovered around the fortune-telling tent, waiting for Mrs. Legg to leave for her rendezvous with Michael Wayman in the Folly. Upon which she entered and changed once again into her Italian outfit with the black wig.
A flashback shows Hattie putting her brunette wig on in Madame Zuleika's tent. In the boathouse, Marlene puts the tray that Amanda brought her onto the floor.
Then she goes down to the boathouse and calls out for little Marlene. Marlene, no doubt delighted to hear Lady Stubbs, gets up, looks, sees no one, opens the door, and finds an entirely unknown presence bearing down upon her. Is that specific enough for you, Inspector? Or should we go into greater detail still and go into the motives and the sensations? Was it amusing killing that girl? Was it easy, as it is in the cinema? Or is it much more difficult as the noose slowly tightens? Or perhaps there is some pleasure to be derived from it.
She was a fat, stupid, greedy little kid that got exactly what she deserved for trying to blackmail us.
You may not judge her. You have absolutely no right to take something that doesn't belong to you. Greedy, did you say? What could be greedier than just destroying something because it stands in the way of your own miserable ambitions? Why, you are very lucky, you know, that I am not responsible for your punishment.
He turns around and paces past Bland.
Where were we?
At the boathouse, old man.
The boathouse, yes. Well, then this lady comes out of the boathouse. She has time to toss Lady Stubbs's hat into the water, and she goes back to her hostel. Her part of the conspiracy is now finished. Finally, we pass to Sir George, the swimmer of laps. Is he perhaps a health fanatic? No, Sir George was in training for a specific event, a deadly event, which was performed not after Marlene's murder, but before. For Sir George, this task was a pitifully easy one, especially after such rigorous training. A short swim to the boat landing, and poor drunken old Martel is pulled under. His song is silenced forever. Voila!
A flashback as Sir George drags the ferryman into the river. In the drawing room, Amy shuts her eyes sadly.
Sir George? You are nicked, my old son.
Sitting next to Amy, he clasps her hand.
I did all this for you, Mother. To give you back Nass House.
God forgive me for loving you too much, son. I can't help you now. No one can.
Why not? You always have before.
He grips her hand and shoulder tightly and glares at her. The cops drag Sir George and Hattie away.
Take your hands off me! I wish to speak with my mother!
Amy watches anxiously.
Done it again, Poirot.
Congratulations. Maybe a touch more long-winded than the ABC murders. But you're still right up there with the best. I mean, compared to you, I'm just a flatfoot.
No, a policeman. No. Oh, you know, there are some people who have to exercise their little grey cells, others who merely lock people into them. Long-winded.
Ariadne joins Hastings and Poirot by the fireplace.
Well, Mr. Poirot, thanks to you, I have my next novel, The Copycat Killing.
The Copycat Killing? I enjoyed your last one. I finished it, but I have lost it somewhere
now. Here. I want you to keep that copy. Tell me, when did you first suspect that the time bomb was surgically implanted in the parakeet?
Poirot glances at Hastings and shrugs.
On Tuesday.
Oh. Very good. Is it any good?
You tell me. But I'll tell you something. We'll both be in the next one.
ITFC Audio Description.